Welcome to Meet the Icon, and this week our icon is Whitley Strieber. In a moment, Farah Yerdoza and Larry Dickin will join us. Then later, Whitley Strieber. In The Wolfen, Whitley Strieber writes, "She examined her victim with her eyes. The flesh was not visible. It was under thick folds of clothing. She would have to plunge into the cloth and rip out the throat. All at once, she opened her nose and the rich smell of the world around her came back in. She listened up and down the street, only distant automobile traffic. Now was the time. She was down. She was pushing her nose past the cloth, slick, hot flesh, feeling her teeth scrape back and down, pressing her tongue against the deliciously salty skin, and ripping with all the strength in her jaw, and jumping back to the wall with the bloody throat in her mouth. Her job was over. She dropped back behind the wall and ate her trophy. It was rich and sweet with blood. Around her, the pack, very happy. As the pack continued their work, the organs were snipped carefully. One lung, the stomach, the colon, they were all put aside because of rot. Then the pack ate in rank order. The mother took the brain. The father took a thigh and a buttock. When they had finished, they took part the remains, piece by piece, and dropped them in a nearby lake. They kicked as much new snow as they could over the blood of their feast. When this was done, they went to a place they had seen earlier, a great meadow full of beautiful new snow that had been falling. They ran and danced in the snow, feeling the pleasure of their bodies, the joy of racing headlong across the circle. And because they knew no human was within earshot, they let go a joyous howl. The sound rose through the park, echoing off the buildings that surrounded it. Inside those buildings, a few wakeful people stirred, made restive by the cold and ancient terror that the sound communicated to man. Welcome to Meet the Icon, and we have an icon for sure, Whitley Strieber, and we'll be talking to him in a moment. Farah Yerdoza and Larry Dickin are together in Secaucus at our studio. Farah, how are you?
Hi, greetings from New Jersey. How are you?
Okay, it's great. It's always nice to talk to you. And Larry Dickin, you've been reading Whitley Strieber since his first book, I think.
Yes, I have, and incidentally, welcome to New Jersey from me, too, just like yes, every week. But
it's one of those assumed things. You're right.
Right.
Maybe we shouldn't assume it. You're welcome.
And I have indeed read just about all of Whitley's communion books, On the Grays, and an excellent series. And I'm certainly looking forward to reading the new one. And also, I understand he is a movie deal in the works here, and I'm looking forward to seeing the movie, that's for sure.
We'll find out about it when we talk to Whitley, for sure. He'll be on the line from his studio that he does the Dreamland show from every week out in Southern California. Farah, you actually met Whitley in person recently over in Manhattan.
Yes, last month he had a book signing day in Manhattan in a bookstore. And I wanted to meet him in person. I wanted to ask him if he wants to be a part of our show, and he agreed. But my meeting with Whitley Strieber books, it's 15 years ago. His first book that I found out was The Hunger, the vampire book. And I also watched that wonderful movie with Catherine Deneuve, Susan Sarandon, and David Bowie.
I understand what you're saying. You know, it appears to me, and you and I have had these discussions off the air,
yes,
that perhaps some of these horror book writings that he wrote earlier, that genre, They might have been influenced by the UFO, by the Greys as well.
Very much.
I know you're going to bring that up in the conversation, I bet you.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
you'll probably ask him.
Yes, I will, because I really think that there is a connection between vampires and nighttime visitors, Greys or aliens.
Jerry?
Yes.
You know, just a little side comment on that, too, is remember our conversation this past year about the Spielberg treatment of the War of the Worlds and the fact that the ETs were portrayed as blood lovers, and they were actually herding people through New Jersey and picking them up and turning them into hamburger, and especially extracting the blood. All sounds very gory, but still and again, that theme of the need for blood.
We'll bring that up in the conversation with him as well, and we're going to talk about that movie deal he has. You know, Whitley's no stranger to show business at all, and I mean that as a compliment. He's been around. Farah, at your meeting with Whitley, you size up people. Everybody does when they meet them. What was your impression of him?
Well, it was a book signing day for Whitley Strieber and a friend of him. He was a photographer. And it was an interesting meeting because there was Whitley Strieber, a professional photographer, and a musician, a rock musician, Lou Reed, and there was a porn star. So there were four stars there, and each of them were a star in their own field. So it was a very crowded meeting, but each of them had their own fans. So obviously, me and my friends, we were interested in Whitley Strieber.
Well,
I
you
guess
know,
the porn star didn't fare well with you guys, huh?
Farah, though, did right. She got the interview, and that's the important part.
Yes,
in fact, we're going to do the interview when we come back, as we meet the icon, Whitley Strieber. Don't go away.
Okay.
My Search for the Afterlife is a book that explores real communications between a father and his deceased son. A rare number theory is developed during Dennis Spaulding's quest. My Search for the Afterlife is a book that shares a theory believed to help his son and other spirits validate the messages they sent across worlds. To learn more about this unique and moving book, visit their website at mysearchfortheafterlife.com. That's mysearchfortheafterlife.com.
Meteorologists are at a loss to explain what is causing this weather and why it has taken them by surprise.
That sudden drop in temperature has half an hour ago. Mexican officials closed the border on the line of
be prepared to go live to Los Angeles.
What you see is happening now.
Look over there behind me. That's a tornado. Yes, a twister.
This is just massive.
Lower Manhattan is virtually inaccessible.
A wall of water coming towards New York City. Everybody.
That's from the soundtrack of The Day After Tomorrow, one of Whitley Strieber's masterpieces, and a great movie, by the way. We're back to meet the icon.
Save as many as you can.
And Whitley Strieber's on the line from Santa Monica. Whitley, Farah Yudoza will join us in a minute. But first of all, I want to tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the air with us. And I know we're going to have a great conversation. And I love your radio show, Dreamland. How long have you been doing that?
7 years.
It's an incredible show and very successful. And it's very interesting. I've listened to you week after week after week. And I can tell you from experience, it's not easy to come up with these guests, but you always manage to come up with a pretty good one.
Well, I've got a real expert sitting behind me in the office. My wife, Ann, does that.
And how's Ann doing these days?
Fabulous.
Good. Vera, why don't you say hello to Whitley?
Hello, Whitley. How are you?
Well, fine, thank you.
What's it like in Hollywood today, Whitley?
Well, I'm not in Hollywood, actually. Santa Monica, which is very different. It's cool and...
Yeah, I used to live in Santa Monica, so I know what you're talking about. Nice place.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, Farah, we have Whitley on the phone, and I know you have a lot of things you want to talk to him about, and I'll let you start.
Yes, thank you. Well, here we have an extremely gray day in New Jersey, and gray aliens are coming back into our lives with your new book, Whitley. So we are very, very excited about this new book, and I would like to listen from you the story of this new book.
Well, the story of it is this. I went through 11 years of close encounters up until 1997 when I lived in upstate New York. And during that time, after the first few years, I quit writing about it because for two reasons. One, I didn't feel that the press was receptive enough, and I thought that what was happening was one of the most potentially valuable things that had ever happened. And I wanted to take my time in how I would address it, and I wanted to let it play out. And it did eventually play out, and it was a phenomenal life experience, I think one of the great life experiences of all time. And my responsibility became, how do I make this valuable to others, as it is to me? And I've written nonfiction about the grays, as you know, with Communion, Transformation, and Breakthrough. And there is a limitation there, because everything this involves has to do with communication. There is a huge communications gap between us and them. It's much bigger than you can imagine. What they do in order to communicate meaningfully is much more different from what we do than what we do is from what dolphins do. And we're not really computing with each other at all. And I chose to go to writing fiction.
Yes, this time is a novel.
A novel, because it can communicate. The reader can live the experience in fiction in a way that in a nonfiction book is just not possible. So that's why I did it as fiction. And the reviewers are saying that the abduction sequences are vividly real. And another reason I did it as fiction is that nobody who hadn't had these experiences, really had them, could write like this about them. And people know that. They know that instinctively. And people who understand writing, they know it literally. So the book is, in many ways, going to be much more convincing than the nonfiction books ever were.
It's a fiction. It's a novel, but also it is based on your own experiences, I think.
Very definitely.
Are you sharing more secrets, or are there more revelations in this book?
Well, it's not secrets. I'm not interested. I don't keep secrets. I tell everything I can tell. I mean, that I'm able, and I say can, not that I'm allowed to, but that I'm able to. Communicating about this is the critical thing. It's very, very hard to do, and I'm hoping that the flavor, the way it feels to have a relationship with the Grays, will come across through the book. And in the book also, there is material about an empath who works for the government in the book, in the fiction. And her experiences of learning how to communicate with the Grays are mine. This is what I did over the years, and how it felt, and what it resulted in.
Yeah.
So it's like it's a work of fiction that's also a textbook and a map of an emotional journey.
Personally, I can't wait to read it, and I can't wait to see the movie, because this book is going to be also a movie.
That's part of the effort, and I hope it comes into fruition. You never know with a movie, but I'm hopeful that the full expression of this will happen, and that on the other side of it, we'll have a different relationship with the grays, maybe a more functional one. And by functional, I mean one that we gain value from, rather than simply being frightened of, and they will lash out at us, and they don't sometimes respect us the way we respect ourselves. They treat us more like animals, as you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to change all of that because I think this. I think basically if we gain a relationship with somebody from the outside, and the grays, I chose the grays because they're the ones I know. They're the ones that related to me. I know there are probably other visitors here, but they're the ones who had a relationship with me primarily. So that's why they're the stars of my story. But if we have, if we gain a relationship like this, then mankind gets to express ourselves into the cosmos. And just last week, Stephen Hawking said, if we don't do this, if we don't get out into the cosmos, we're going extinct. And he's dead right. That's the stakes. It's huge. The stakes are absolutely enormous. And I think that a gigantic factor in this is whether or not we are able to communicate and relate with beings from the outside. If we are, we're going to win big. If we aren't, then I think we risk extinction.
Whitley and Farah, can I jump in here and ask a question? You mentioned something that perked my interest, piqued it right off the bat, and that was the communication factor with the grays and with humans. Could you go into that a little bit more? I mean, it's almost as if you're saying, and maybe I'm misreading something here, that we're talking past each other.
Well, it's not that we're talking past each other. It's that, well, first of all, they don't talk.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they...
Yeah, I was using that as a figurative.
Yeah, they can talk. I mean, they can generate voices that you can hear in two ways. One is audibly, using a machine that synthesizes voice, and the other is in your head, but neither of these with a sort of a microwave system. But neither of these is really them talking. They don't talk. They are not in the flow of time in the same way we are. Their experience of time is very different from ours. And this means that from our perception, when they try to communicate, it comes out as a kind it's really hard to put into words. That's why I wrote.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I understand.
It comes out as a kind of a muddle, really, because it's a whole being and a whole body and a whole mind communication of a type that we simply don't have among ourselves.
Much more difficult than say, for instance, Farah, who's from Turkey, has a great accent, but I can understand her.
Well, it's much more difficult than that.
Yeah.
Well, for example, we talk in... We have this. We have this way of communicating potentially, but we convert it into a linear form and utter it through vocal cords. They don't have vocal cords. They don't utter that way. They don't speak that way. Therefore, their language doesn't really come into time the way ours does. And their language... temporally, in terms of time, they might say something that has meaning throughout millions of years. And, you know, how are you going to pick up on that?
Yeah.
You know, it's just really, really hard. And it takes a lot of careful reason. It takes extremely careful observation because it all happens very, very quickly. And it takes an emotional context. You have to be in the right emotional context. If you're too frightened or euphoric or any of those things, it does not work. They need you to be in a state of emotional balance. And that's what the character who plays the government empath in the book achieves, is this state of emotional balance. And then she can communicate with the gray, and information flows unbelievably, and more than information. It involves an actual ascent into a whole other level of reality, something that we are capable of doing but we don't do. We're very capable of this. We're no less intelligent than the greys. Believe me, I know that from personal experience.
It is interesting that you mentioned about this talking process, because I was going to ask you, did you ever hear their voices when you had the communication, but you already gave me the answer.
Yeah, no, it's not. But there is an answer. There is another answer. The answer is yes.
Did you hear their voice?
They make sounds.
What kind of sounds?
I have heard. I'll give you an example. I spent weeks setting up a meeting with one of these grays at a certain place in the woods.
Yes.
The time of the meeting was chosen to be just at dawn, because there's a lot of issues. They have a lot of issues that I won't even get into about why they can't be in comfortable in our sunlight, that have to do with science that's beyond where we are, so far beyond that it'd be a whole another show to even explain what the problem is. But in any case, if this person was going to be in the open air, it had to, and I didn't want it at night because it would be too frightening for me. So we chose this middle ground of just when dawn was coming. And I went down toward the woods, and unfortunately there came a voice in my head that was part of an automatic device that defends them from, it creates a defensive perimeter around wherever they are if they're exposed. And it spoke in words in such a frightening way that it stopped me and I couldn't go forward. I knew if I took another step forward, I would be past it and it would be gone, but I just couldn't bear it. And I turned and I went back to the house. And when I put my hand on the doorknob, there came three cries from the woods that were the most extraordinary sounds I have ever known. They were the richest, most emotionally filled, saddest sounds. And then there came a movement through the woods, and something invisible rushed into the house with me. And the next thing I knew, it was in contact with me. It had come anyway. And I experienced one of these incredible communications that threw my mind back into my babyhood, and suddenly, with an adult consciousness, I was reliving the first moment I walked as vividly as if it was happening again, but I knew and understood with an adult's mind what it was like to be in a baby's body. This is the way the grays communicate, and believe me, it is awesome. You understand the incredible intensity of what I'm describing from the whole thing.
Yes, yes, I can feel it right now from your voice. In fact, I'm sure it was extremely intense in that moment, and still it has the same effect on you. But I would like to ask you one thing. What was that invisible thing who came inside with you into the house?
Let's see, what were you talking about there?
You said something invisible came with you.
If I could answer that question, I'd be farther along than I am. I would guess that it was the essence, in a way, of or the gray itself, the being that I was supposed to meet, because this invisibility, which they say has to do with speed, incidentally, or communicated to me that it has to do with speed by demonstrating, is very much a part of the whole experience. They are often in this state, and sometimes it seems to be that they're in this state because of something about the way they are, and other times it's because of something that's technological. They use a kind of a hooded covering that makes them invisible, and incidentally, we are just in the process of discovering that. There was a story on our website, actually, about a week ago, 2 weeks ago, about an invisibility blanket that's being developed right now, and I think it's very similar to something that the Greys use.
It looks like a fairy tale.
Bear, it may seem like something out of a science fiction magazine, but really, I've been reading about this kind of thing. Evidently, it is being developed. I've read several articles about it. When we continue with the next segment, Whitley Strieber will tell us about his relationship with a female gray. A truly close encounter of the third kind, for sure. Don't go away. Remember, August 22nd, The Grays will hit the bookstores. The Grays by Whitley Strieber, destined to be a bestseller. We'll be right back.
The doors are finally open at ShopJerryPippin.com. Explore our new iShop. It's open and growing. You can use any major credit card or your checking account with our PayPal connection. Our first edition t-shirt selections features three different Jerry Pippin UFO files designs. In addition, we will be adding collector t-shirts from select UFO conferences, as well as several novelty items. Check us out at ShopJerryPippin.com.